All right, let's jump into another deep dive. This time we're taking a look at the book of Deuteronomy.
Deuteronomy.
Yeah, the first three chapters.
Okay.
And these act as like a historical prologue to the rest of the book.
Yeah.
And we'll be looking at this material through the lens of Dr. Cynthia Parker's lecture series.
Oh, she's great.
Oh, yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah.
She really makes this ancient text come alive.
She does. She really does.
So get ready, because we're going to be uncovering some pretty interesting connections.
Okay.
Between geography, ancient trade routes, and the type of kingdom God had in mind for the Israelites.
Well, I'm excited to dive into this.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so fascinating how these chapters set the stage,
mm-hmm.
not only for the laws and commandments that we think of when we think of Deuteronomy,
right.
but also really for the heart of the kingdom that God envisioned.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about that geographical context.
Okay.
You know, it seems like these riverine civilizations, like the ones in Egypt and Mesopotamia, held all the power in the ancient world, right? Because of the fertile lands around the Nile, the Tigris, the Euphrates.
Absolutely.
Those rivers, they made trading so easy, communicating.
Oh, yeah. It was a game changer for those civilizations.
Huge, right. And building empires just became so much easier with those rivers.
Huh?
But then, here's the thing, the promised land,
right.
the land, you know, at the center of the biblical narrative,
yeah.
it just doesn't have that kind of river system.
That's true, it doesn't.
It really makes you wonder, doesn't it?
It does.
You know, if God's plan was for the Israelites to build this huge empire through, you know, military conquest,
right.
why wouldn't he have put them in a much better location geographically?
Exactly. It really challenges our assumptions, doesn't it? About what God was doing.
It really does. I mean, what I find so fascinating, and Dr. Parker points this out in her lectures,
yeah.
is that the Promised Land, it was really strategically placed at this crossroads of trade routes.
It was a hub.
It was a hub. They were right in the middle of everything.
Yeah.
Not in terms of, you know, armies and military might.
Right.
But just in terms of exposure to all these different nations and cultures.
It's like a different kind of power, isn't it?
It really is. It paints a very different picture.
It does.
Of what power might have looked like in the ancient world.
Absolutely.
So this really gets to the heart, I think, of what kind of kingdom God was establishing.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't about dominating the world. It was about being a witness
yes.
to the nations that were passing through.
Right.
It's a theme that we're going to see over and over again as we go deeper into the book of Deuteronomy.
Yeah, it keeps coming back, this idea of being a light to the nations.
Totally. Absolutely. And speaking of flipping the script, let's talk about the patriarchs for a second.
Okay.
You know, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob,
yeah.
they lived this nomadic lifestyle.
They were always on the move.
Always on the move. Always traveling.
Right. They were sojourners, foreigners, really, without land rights,
right.
just constantly on the go.
Right. They were never settled in one place.
Yeah.
Even Abraham only got land at the very end of his life.
That's such a crucial detail, isn't it?
It is.
It really emphasizes that the Israelites,
yeah.
even before they became a nation,
right.
they were defined more by their journey,
yeah.
by their movement, than by owning land.
By their movement. That's fascinating. I never thought of it that way.
It's a whole different way of looking at their identity.
Yeah. And here's a pattern that Dr. Parker points out that I just find so interesting.
Okay.
You know, these patriarchs, they kept getting pulled back toward those powerful empires.
That's true.
Like Egypt and Mesopotamia, there's almost this gravitational pull.
Yeah. Like they can't resist the allure of those powerful civilizations.
Right. Exactly.
But, you know, it foreshadows the Israelites' later experience in Egypt.
Yes.
This constant tension between the pull of those established powers,
mm-hmm.
and then the call to follow a different path, a different kind of kingdom.
It's like this constant struggle between, you know, what's familiar and comfortable.
Right, the known.
And then this call to something new and unknown.
The unknown, exactly.
And that call, it leads them on this, like, winding path out of Egypt, south to Mount Sinai.
40 years in the wilderness.
40 years wandering. It's crazy, right?
It is. It's a long time.
It's a long time.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating how the editor of Deuteronomy
yeah.
gives us such specific geographical and historical context.
Right from the start.
Right from the start, like right off the bat.
Yeah, it's like setting the stage.
Right, exactly.
Wants to make sure we understand where we are in time and space.
Yes, we get a clear time frame.
40 years after leaving Egypt.
40 years.
Yeah.
And details about the location where Moses is giving the speech.
Yes, it's all very deliberate.
Very deliberate. It's like setting the stage for this epic speech, right?
Absolutely.
And then there's that collective you.
Oh, yeah.
That Moses uses when he starts speaking.
In Deuteronomy 1.6.
1.6, yes. And Dr. Parker really unpacks this so well.
She does. It's one of my favorite parts of her lectures.
Okay, tell us more about this you. What's so powerful about it?
Well, Moses isn't just talking to the people standing right there in front of him.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking to all future generations of Israelites.
Wow.
He's claiming this whole history as a shared inheritance.
It's like he's speaking across time.
He is. It's incredible.
That's incredible.
And I would even argue that you extends to us today.
To us?
Yes, to us.
Wow.
Like he's inviting us to see ourselves as part of this story.
That's a powerful thought.
It is. It's really profound.
Yeah. So we've got the stage set, right?
We do.
With this incredible geographical and historical backdrop.
Yeah. We're grounded in time and space.
And then Moses takes the Israelites back to their journey toward the promised land.
Yeah.
And he reminds them of this moment when they arrive at Kadesh Barnea.
Oh, yeah.
And he keeps using this phrase.
Good land.
Good land. Yes. Over and over.
And you know what's interesting about that phrase?
What?
It echoes the language of Eden. In Genesis.
Oh, wow. I never noticed that.
It's subtle, but it's there.
Okay.
It suggests that the promised land, it's not just a physical territory.
Uh-huh.
It has the potential to be a paradise.
Like a new Eden.
Like a new Eden. Exactly.
Wow.
A place where God's blessing can really flourish.
Okay. So it's this land full of potential.
Full of potential, yes.
But here's the thing. The Israelites, they are terrified to enter.
They are. They're full of fear.
Remember the spies they sent in?
Oh, yeah, the spies.
They came back with these stories about giants and fortified cities.
Right. They saw obstacles everywhere.
They were totally spooked.
They focused on the negative.
Yeah, they were blinded by their fear.
And, you know, it's a classic case.
Of what?
Of human doubt.
Mm.
Overshadowing divine promise.
It's like they forgot everything God had done for them.
They did. They completely lost sight of his faithfulness.
And this is a theme we see throughout Deuteronomy, right?
Yes.
This tension between God's faithfulness.
And human fear and doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I love how Dr. Parker points out that this specific Hebrew word used for good.
Oh, yes. Tov.
Tov. Yeah. It adds like another layer of meaning.
It does. For those who are interested in the original language.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've got the Israelites freaking out.
Right. Petrified.
And Moses is basically saying, hey, remember how God fought for you in Egypt?
He's going to do it again.
He's going to do it again. He's got your back.
It's like he's trying to jolt their memory.
Yes. He's reminding them of God's power.
Uh-huh.
And it introduces this other central theme of Deuteronomy.
Which is?
God as warrior.
Yes. The protector.
The protector. The one who fights for his people.
It's a powerful image.
It is. It's epic. But they seem to have forgotten all about it.
They did. They needed a reminder.
They needed a reminder. So Moses reminds them of God's provision in the wilderness.
Of the manna, the water from the rock.
And those pillars of fire and cloud that guided them.
Oh, yes, those pillars.
Dr. Parker, she brings in this like beautiful rabbinic interpretation of those pillars.
Oh, I love this interpretation.
Oh, tell me.
They're seen as the legs of God.
Oh, legs of God.
Walking alongside his people.
Wow, that's incredible imagery.
It is. It's so powerful.
Yeah, it really speaks to God's closeness with them.
Yeah, this intimacy.
Even in the midst of their doubts.
Even when they're messing up.
He's still there with them.
Always present.
Okay, so let's not forget, they weren't alone in this good land.
Right. There were others there.
It's clear they were entering into a land.
That was already occupied.
Already occupied by other nations.
Yeah, it wasn't an empty space waiting for them.
Right, like Edom, Moab, Ammon.
Oh, yeah. And Dr. Parker really emphasizes how important it is to understand these relationships.
So,
like, we can't just read this story in isolation.
Right.
The Israelites are stepping into this complex geopolitical landscape.
Right, they're not just showing up out of nowhere.
And she uses maps to show us exactly where these different nations were located.
It's so helpful. It really brings the whole picture to life.
It does. It's like having a Google Maps of the ancient world.
I love that analogy. A Google Maps of the ancient world.
Yeah, suddenly it all clicks.
It all clicks. Okay, so let's break it down. First, we've got Edom to the south.
The descendants of Esau.
Esau. So there's this family connection there. Right.
A close one.
Close relatives. And God is very clear.
About respecting Edom's borders.
About respecting Edom, avoiding conflict.
Yeah. Even though they're related.
Huh?
They have their own land, their own destiny.
It's like a divine decree for respecting boundaries.
It is, even within family.
Even within family, right.
It speaks to God's respect for the sovereignty of all nations.
Okay. Then you've got Moab and Ammon to the north.
Their history is a bit more, well, let's just say colorful.
Their origins are linked to
Abraham's nephew.
Abraham's nephew.
And those family dynamics were, well, let's just say unconventional.
Unconventional. Yeah, we're not going to get into the details here.
It's a bit of a scandalous backstory.
Yeah, suffice it to say, it's a wild ride.
It is. But the fascinating thing is,
what?
Even with this, let's call it a risque history.
Risque, okay.
God still instructs the Israelites
mm-hmm.
to respect Moab and Ammon, to avoid conflict with them.
Wow, even with that baggage.
Even with their past, they too have a right to exist.
It's incredible, isn't it?
It is. It's a testament to God's grace and mercy.
It makes you think, how do we treat those who come from different backgrounds?
It's a challenge, isn't it?
It is. It's a challenge to extend that same grace.
To see beyond the past.
Yeah. Okay. So we've got these established nations surrounding the Israelites.
Right. And then there are the Philistines.
The Philistines on the West Coast.
Yeah. They're a bit of a wild card in all of this.
They are. Why is that?
Well, they're relative newcomers to the region.
Okay.
They arrived around the same time as the Israelites.
Interesting.
And they weren't part of that Canaanite culture that was already there.
So they're like the new kids on the block.
They are.
And they're not afraid to make some noise.
Not at all.
So they represent this different kind of challenge.
Uh-huh.
I have a feeling they're going to play a significant role as the story unfolds.
No, I think you're right.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see how that all plays out.
Okay, so we've got this fascinating tapestry of nations.
Surrounding the Israelites.
Surrounding them, right. And God's got some very specific instructions.
About how to interact with them.
About how to interact. And it's not about, you know, conquering or dominating.
No, it's about something else.
It's about respect.
Respect, boundaries.
Boundaries, diplomacy even.
Yeah, it's a different approach.
It's a radical departure from the way things were normally done back then.
Completely different.
And honestly, it feels like a message that's just as relevant today.
Absolutely. It's timeless.
Okay, so before we move on, there's this part that I always kind of felt like was a detour.
Oh, what's that?
The battles against Sihon and Og.
Oh, yeah, Sihon and Og.
They were these kings who controlled the land east of the Jordan.
Right. They weren't even in Canaan proper.
Exactly. So why are these battles even included in the narrative?
Well, Dr. Parker has some interesting insights on that.
Okay. I'm all ears.
She points out that on a practical level, these battles secured access to the Jordan River.
Oh, okay. So there's a strategic element there.
Yeah. They needed that access to enter the Promised Land.
Makes sense. So they're not just random skirmishes.
Right.
There's a purpose.
But she also suggests that they acted as these practice battles.
Practice battles.
Yeah. A way to build up the Israelites' confidence.
Oh, okay.
After all that fear and reluctance at Kadesh Barnea.
I see. They needed to shake off that doubt.
Exactly.
Remember what it felt like to win?
To have victory.
With Moses leading them and God fighting for them?
It's like a confidence booster.
Confidence booster. Before the main event.
Yeah, before they tackled the challenge of conquering Canaan.
So it's like a mini boot camp.
I like that. A mini boot camp.
They're getting ready.
They're getting prepped.
For the real battle ahead.
Yep.
I love that analogy. Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground in this first part.
We have the setting, the history, the neighboring nations.
Those neighboring nations, so much to think about.
And those early victories.
Yes, those early victories, so important for their confidence.
Absolutely.
But there's so much more to uncover in Deuteronomy.
Oh, there is. We're just getting started.
We're just getting started. We're just scratching the surface.
There's so much depth to this book.
There is so much depth. So we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
And when we come back, we'll dive into the next part of our exploration.
Sounds good. I'm excited to keep going.
Me too. This is fascinating stuff.
It is. It really is.
Okay. We'll be right back after this short break.
Welcome back to our deep dive into Deuteronomy. It's really becoming clear now that this isn't just a book of laws.
No, not at all.
It's a story, a journey.
A journey with all its twists and turns.
Yeah, and in the last part, we talked about how God calls his people to a different path.
A different way of engaging with the world. A different way of engaging with the world, challenging those old assumptions.
About power and influence.
About power and influence, right? Those worldly ideas of power.
Yeah, it's a whole new perspective.
It really is, and part of that new way.
Involved a new approach to leadership, actually.
Oh, okay. Tell me more about that.
Well, Dr. Parker, she points out this fascinating detail in her lecture.
Okay.
She talks about how in the wilderness, Moses had to delegate authority.
Oh, that makes sense.
Because there were just too many people.
Right.
And too many issues for him to handle all on his own.
Yeah, it's a logistical necessity.
Yeah, when you're dealing with a large group of people
uh-huh.
on the move.
On the move, constantly.
So he appointed leaders from each tribe to kind of handle those day-to-day matters.
To share the load.
Yeah, and he reserved only the most difficult problems for himself.
Okay, so it's like a system of shared leadership.
It is. Yeah, and what's interesting is that Dr. Parker highlights how Deuteronomy also anticipates a different leadership structure for when they actually settle in the Promised Land.
So it's like they're preparing for a transition, not just geographically, but also
in how they govern themselves.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's like a blueprint.
For a new system.
For a new system, exactly.
And this new system, it's tailored to, you know, the challenges and opportunities of a more settled life.
Right, because life in the Promised Land is going to be different.
Very different.
From life in the wilderness.
So it's not just about conquering the land.
It's also about
how they're going to live together.
How they're going to organize themselves as a society.
Exactly. And it raises some interesting questions
about
how God intended his people to, organize themselves.
Not just as a spiritual community.
But also as a society.
Yeah, those are big questions.
They are. And I think they have implications for us today.
Oh, how so?
Well, it makes you think about how we build communities.
Yeah. And how we govern ourselves.
Yeah. How we structure our societies.
Right. Are there lessons we can learn from the Israelites?
That's a great question to ponder. But before we get too far ahead,
okay,
I want to go back to Moses' speech for a minute.
Okay.
He brings up this event that seems to have really traumatized the Israelites.
Oh, yeah. The story of the spies.
The spies being sent into Canaan.
A turning point.
A turning point.
A moment where fear just completely takes over.
It's a major setback, isn't it?
It is. A huge one.
I mean, their whole destiny is on the line.
Right there.
They've been promised this incredible land, but then they just get totally spooked.
By those stories of giants and fortified cities.
By those stories, right? They can't see past the obstacles.
You can't see the potential.
Yeah, it's like their vision is clouded.
Blinded by fear.
And it's interesting that Moses chooses to retell this story at this point.
It is. It's not just random.
There's a reason.
He's trying to teach them something.
So it's more than just a history lesson.
Yeah, it's a cautionary tale.
A warning, right.
A warning against giving into fear.
And forgetting
everything God has already done for them.
Forgetting God's faithfulness. Yeah.
That's the key.
I wonder if he's also foreshadowing future challenges.
I think you're right.
Because even though they're about to enter the Promised Land,
it's not going to be easy.
It's not going to be a walk in the park.
No, there will be obstacles.
There will be battles to fight.
So the story of the spies
is both a warning
and a preparation.
Preparation for what lies ahead.
Exactly. For the inevitable trials that come with claiming and settling a new land.
So it's like they need to remember this experience.
Yeah, learn from their mistakes.
And face the future with courage and faith.
And trust in God's faithfulness.
Yeah, okay, so we've got the geographical context, the leadership structures, the story of the spies.
Right, and we've talked about those neighboring nations.
Right, the Israelites weren't entering into a vacuum.
No, they were stepping into a world that was already full of relationships and history.
A complex tapestry.
Yeah. And Dr. Parker uses maps to show us exactly where these different nations were located.
It's like having that Google Maps of the ancient world again.
Yeah. Suddenly it all makes sense.
It all clicks into place. Okay. So let's recap some of these neighbors.
Okay.
We talked about Edom to the south.
The descendants of Esau.
Right. Those close relatives.
And God's command to avoid conflict with them.
To respect their sovereignty.
Yeah, even though they're family.
But then there's Moab and Ammon up north.
Their history is a bit more, well, let's just say unconventional.
We talked about that, their connection to
the Abraham's nephew.
And those, shall we say, interesting family dynamics.
Yeah, a bit of a scandal there.
Bit of a scandal, but the point is,
even with that colorful background,
God still commands the Israelites
to avoid conflict.
To respect Moab and Ammon's right to exist.
Right, it's about showing grace and mercy.
Even to those with a less than perfect past.
It's a challenge for us, isn't it?
It is. To extend that same grace to others.
To see beyond their past.
Yeah. And then you have the Philistines on the West Coast.
The wild card.
The wild card, right? Newcomers to the region.
Arriving around the same time as the Israelites.
Interesting. So they weren't part of the existing Canaanite culture.
No, they were something different.
They represent a different kind of challenge.
Yeah. A new element in this complex mix.
It's like they're adding another layer of tension.
To an already tense situation.
I can just imagine the Israelites looking at all these different nations and thinking, what have we gotten ourselves into?
Right. It's a daunting prospect.
It is. But it's fascinating how God is so specific.
About how he wants his people to interact with these neighbors.
It's not about conquering or dominating.
No, it's about something else.
It's about respect.
Respect, boundaries, a willingness to engage with those who are different.
It's a different vision of what it means to be powerful.
Yeah, it's not about military might.
It's about something deeper.
Building relationships.
Seeking justice and peace.
Even with those who might seem like enemies.
It's a radical vision, and I think there's so much we can learn from it today.
Absolutely. It's a timeless message.
Okay, I want to circle back to something we touched on earlier.
Okay.
This idea of God as warrior.
A powerful concept.
Powerful, but also a bit jarring.
Especially in our modern context.
Yeah. It's hard to reconcile with the image of God as loving and merciful.
It is. It's a tension we have to wrestle with.
So if God is a warrior, what does that mean for us today?
That's a great question. And I think it's important to remember the context in which this language was used.
Right. The Israelites were facing some serious threats.
They were surrounded by hostile nations.
They needed a God who could protect them.
A God who was strong and powerful.
So it was a way of understanding God's power.
And his willingness to defend his people.
Okay. But we're not living in the same context.
Right. We're not constantly facing physical threats.
So how do we apply this concept today?
Well, I think it's important to consider the metaphorical nature of this language.
Metaphorical.
God is not literally waging war.
Yeah.
In the same way that human armies do.
Okay, so it's not about physical violence.
No, it's about something else.
What?
I think the battles we face today are often more internal.
Internal battles.
Yeah, battles against fear.
Doubt.
Temptation.
Those are real battles.
They are, and they're the forces that seek to pull us away from God.
It's like those practice battles the Israelites fought.
Against Sihon and Og.
Right. They were preparing for the real battles ahead.
In the same way.
Our own struggles.
Our moments of adversity.
Shouldn't be seen as preparation.
For those larger spiritual battles we face.
Okay, I like that analogy.
It's a reminder that God is with us in those battles.
He's fighting on our behalf.
He equips us with what we need to overcome.
But what about those who hold a pacifist worldview?
That's a great question, and I think it's important to acknowledge the diversity of perspectives within the Christian tradition.
Okay.
Pacifism is a valid and important theological stance, and there are many ways to interpret and apply these scriptures.
In a way that aligns with that belief system.
Exactly. It's not a one-size-fits-all interpretation.
There's room for different perspectives.
Absolutely, and that's what makes studying these ancient texts so fascinating.
They invite us to think deeply.
To grapple with complex issues.
To engage in dialogue.
And to ultimately come to our own understanding of God and his ways.
Yeah, it's a journey of discovery.
A journey that never really ends.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground.
Geography, history, leadership, neighboring nations, the concept of God as warrior.
It's a lot to take in.
It is, but I think there's an overarching message here.
What's that?
That Deuteronomy is setting the stage for a new kind of kingdom.
A kingdom that's not built on military conquest.
Or worldly power.
But on a right relationship with God.
And with our neighbors.
A kingdom of justice and peace.
It's a radical vision.
And it challenges us to rethink our assumptions about power and influence.
Absolutely. It's a call to a different way of being in the world.
A way that prioritizes relationships and right living.
It's a powerful message.
And I think it's just as relevant today as it was back then.
Maybe even more so.
Okay, so as we move forward in our exploration of Deuteronomy, I think it's important to keep this vision in mind.
To remember what kind of kingdom God is calling us to.
Because we're not just studying an ancient text.
We're engaging with a story that has the power to transform us.
To transform our understanding of God.
Of ourselves.
And of the world around us.
It's a story that can change our lives.
This has been an incredible journey so far.
It has. I'm loving this deep dive.
Me too. It's so rich and thought-provoking.
Okay, so before we move on to the next part, are there any key takeaways you'd like to highlight for our listeners?
Yeah, I think the biggest one is the importance of context.
Absolutely. We can't just read these chapters in isolation.
We have to understand the bigger picture.
The historical, geographical, and theological context.
It's like we've been given this behind-the-scenes look.
At what's to come.
A sneak peek.
Yeah, and now we're ready for the main event.
We've seen the maps, we've heard the backstories.
We're all set for the drama to unfold.
I also think we've learned a lot about the complexity of God's relationship with his people.
It's not a simple relationship.
No, it's full of ups and downs.
Twists and turns.
But one thing is clear.
God is deeply involved.
He's not this distant authoritarian figure.
He's a loving father who walks alongside them.
Guiding and protecting them.
And even fighting for them.
And that idea of God as warrior
it's crucial to understand it correctly.
Right. It's not about violence for its own sake.
It's about God's fierce love.
And his commitment to defending his people.
From injustice and oppression.
It's a powerful image.
And it speaks to the depth of his care for us.
Absolutely. And finally, I hope our listeners are starting to ask themselves, what does it mean to live in the good land today?
That's the question, isn't it?
What are the blessings and challenges we face?
How can we embrace the fullness of God's promises?
In our own lives.
And in the world around us.
Those are big questions.
They are. And I think they're the questions that connect this ancient story to our lives today.
It's not just ancient history.
It's a story that speaks to us right now.
Okay, so I think we're ready for another short break.
That's good.
When we come back,
we'll wrap up our deep dive
into these first three chapters of Deuteronomy.
And see what insights and challenges await us.
And the rest of the book.
I can't wait to explore more.
Me too. This is just the beginning.
The beginning of an amazing journey.
Okay, we'll be right back after this short break.
All right, we're back for the final part of our Deuteronomy deep dive. It's amazing how much we've unpacked just from these first three chapters.
Yeah, it's really dense, isn't it?
We've gone from, you know, ancient empires to God walking with his people.
Right, that image of God's closeness is so powerful.
It really is, and we've seen that tension between worldly power and God's kingdom.
That different kind of kingdom.
Right, a kingdom built on relationships, not on conquering and dominating.
Yeah.
It's a theme that I think will continue to unfold as we go deeper into Deuteronomy.
Absolutely. But before we finish up, I want to make sure our listeners have some key takeaways from these chapters.
Okay. What are some of the big ideas you think are important to highlight?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is the importance of context.
Oh, absolutely.
We can't just read these opening chapters in isolation.
No, they're carefully placed. They have a purpose.
Right. They set the stage for everything that comes after.
Exactly. They help us understand the challenges and opportunities that the Israelites face.
Well, as they prepare to enter the Promised Land.
It's like we've been given a backstage pass.
A sneak peek behind the curtain.
We've seen the maps. We've heard the backstories.
And now we're ready for the main event.
We're all set for the drama to unfold.
Another thing I think we've learned is just how complex God's relationship is with his people.
It's not a simple relationship, that's for sure.
No, it's full of twists and turns.
Ups and downs.
But one thing is clear.
God is deeply involved.
Yeah, he's not some distant authoritarian figure.
No, he's walking with them every step of the way.
Guiding them, protecting them.
Even fighting for them.
And that idea of God as warrior, I think that's so important to understand.
It is. It's a powerful image.
But we have to be careful not to misunderstand it.
Right. It's not about violence for its own sake.
It's about his fierce love and his commitment to defending his people.
From injustice and oppression.
It's a reminder that he's on our side, that he's fighting for what's right.
And finally, I hope our listeners are starting to ask themselves.
I see.
What does it mean to live in the good land today?
Yeah, that's a great question.
What are the blessings and challenges we face?
How can we experience God's promises in our lives?
Those are the questions that connect this ancient story to our lives right now.
It's not just history. It's a living word.
It's a story that speaks to us today.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, is there anything else, any final thought that you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I keep thinking about that image of the Promised Land as a potential paradise.
Right, a place where God's blessing can flourish.
But what if that good land isn't just a physical location?
What do you mean?
What if it's also a way of being, a state of the heart?
A way of living in right relationship with God.
And with each other.
So it's not just about where we live.
But how we live.
And maybe that's what our journey through Deuteronomy is all about.
Discovering how to cultivate that good land.
Within ourselves and in the communities we're a part of.
That's a beautiful thought.
It is. It's like we're all on a pilgrimage searching for that good land.
Yeah, a journey towards wholeness and peace.
Well, on that note, I think we'll wrap up our Deuteronomy deep dive.
I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Me too. Thanks for joining me on this journey.
It's been a pleasure.
To all our listeners out there, thanks for tuning in.
We'll be back soon to explore more of the Bible together.
Until then, keep diving deep and keep searching for that good land within and all around you.